It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Negotiations have broken down over the weekend, and those involved say they aren't so sure that they'll be able to reach a deal by Monday. The current impasse is over immigration enforcement. Democrats want to put a cap on ICE's ability to detain those who are in the country illegally and cut the number of ICE immigration detention beds that Congress funds from roughly 40,000 to 35,000. Republicans want to increase the number of beds by funding an additional 12,000 of them. President Trump has been weighing in on the negotiations throughout the day, including this tweet a short time ago saying the Border Committee Democrats are behaving all of a sudden irrationally. Not only are they unwilling to give dollars for the obviously needed wall, they overrode recommendations of Border Patrol experts, but they don't even want to take murderers into custody. What's going on? Well, GOP Congressman Tom Graves described how negotiations have stalled earlier on ABC's This Week.
I thought we were tracking pretty good over the last week, and it just seems over the last 24 hours or so, the goalposts have been moving from the Democrats. And at the end of the day, we have an obligation that's to protect our nation and provide the proper border security. And as long as the goalposts continue moving, there's really no way so we can lock in where, on an agreement.
This evening, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer blasted Mick Mulvaney for saying another government shutdown was still on the table. In a statement, he said, "I just came back from visiting the border this weekend and can attest that what we need is not a medieval wall, but 21st century technology, port infrastructure, additional trained personnel, and humanitarian assistance." House Democrats will continue to oppose funding for a costly and unnecessary wall that does not make us safer or address the humanitarian challenges on our border. We should note, though, John, that we are told Democrats are open to the idea of funding barriers in certain locations along the border. That number of funding or the amount would be far less than the $5.7 billion the president's demanded. Somewhere in the range of $1 to $2 billion is more likely. Now, if negotiators cannot reach a deal by tomorrow, what we will likely see is a short-term spending bill, a continuing resolution passed so that we don't have another shutdown when the government runs out of money on Friday.
Sandy Rios with you on this Monday. And yeah, I think that's a huge problem because we cannot get Congress to do their job. They haven't done it for decades now in terms of securing the southern border and bringing our immigration laws, helping our agents to enforce the immigration laws. And so we're overrun. And it will continue to happen until something happens that changes it. President Trump is the only person who's actually advocated for enforcing our laws and building a barrier on the southern border. And I just to give you some perspective, Garrett's perspective there was a little more sunny than mine. I think that the president thought that this joint committee, this negotiating committee of both parties, would come up with some plan, and I think he was eager to endorse that plan. But the truth is that the Democrats don't want any kind of border restrictions. They just don't. And to sort of illustrate that, they talked about how they had the behind closed doors testimony from border agents. Well, they did. I don't know who the border agents were, but who they did not let in the room were the ICE agents. ICE had a briefer waiting in the hallway, and they never let him in the room. ICE has a very strong stand on this. And one of the things that the briefer says is that if he'd been allowed to speak, he would have told them that the limits they're pondering to immigrant detention proposed by the Democrats would lead to 30,000 people being released back onto the streets, including thousands of migrants with criminal records. There's a lot more to that. And the conversation is not, of course, just about a border wall. It's about what they're doing is they're detaining people right now, not letting them into the population until they have their hearing about whether they can come in legally or be granted some sort of status until they have their hearing. And what's been happening is they've been released into the population and they never show up again. And so ICE is saying if you reduce the number of detention beds, the places where we can let them sleep while we hold them, then we'll be forced to release, and we'll be forced to release criminals, as well as we have no way of knowing. And so this is the situation we find ourselves in. So the Democrats are taking a hard line, and negotiations have broken down because the Democrats want, they just don't have the same concern. I think the president said it well in his State of the Union address. These elites, and I'd say some of them are Republicans as well, live in very large homes behind walls. They have guards. They have guns, people with guns guarding them. They don't care as long as they have theirs. The American people are crying out for something to be done. Here's the thing. If they don't reach some... Let me see if I can be clear. If I think it was moving on a trajectory where this joint committee would have negotiated things that would not please President Trump's base, would not, but the president, desperate to make a deal, would probably have signed off on some bad things. So I suppose the good news is if it breaks down, it's keeping us from compromising in really bad ways. But if they cannot reach an agreement, then you heard Garrett say that there will probably be a short-term spending bill, but there also is the possibility of another shutdown. Well, now, you know what? That would be okay if the Senate and the House, well, the House is not going to do this, but the House Republicans, if the Senate and House Republicans would enforce the president's view on this, the people's view, if they would join the chorus and lead us, because that's what they're supposed to do, by the way, in terms of fighting back and revealing what the Democrats are pulling the curtain back so that people can understand what the Democrats are actually trying to do, then a government shutdown would make a lot more sense. But they're silent. They go on vacation. They do nothing. And so the president is just left to handle this all by himself, per usual. So I don't have any prediction. I wish I could predict something. What point would it be? We just have to see what happens. I think the alternative is we just give up and let the borders be overrun and let whoever wants to come into this country take the crime, pay the bills until we go under completely because we can't keep up with it. That's really what's going to happen if we don't get a handle on this. Let me just take a bit of a side departure, and let me just thank all of you who have given to India Partners to get these little kids, boys and girls, out of the red light district in Mumbai. We are 50% of our goal, and we have one more week here for you guys to have the opportunity to give to help these kids. And, of course, India Partners provides safe houses for the kids, getting them out of the red light district and out of the prostitution houses, and giving them health care. Can you imagine those little bodies after what they've experienced? I just can't. I don't even want to. But desperately needing health care. And also they hear about the gospel, that there is a Savior, that there is a God, that there is something better in this life and in the next life too. And so if you would like to help, call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or go to afr.net. and make your most generous donation. $7.08 is all it takes for one day. And so I hope that you will make that call, 877-616-2396, and make your pledge the best that you possibly can. So much to say. So let me just see. Remember just what, last week, beginning of last week, at the end of the week before, you heard Andrew Cuomo sign a bill legalizing abortion through the ninth month, even on the day of delivery, and even providing the ability to terminate that child should the parents desire. And this is what that sounded like when he signed the bill, clip 13.
Okay, good evening. It is a good evening this evening. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. Let's give a warm welcome to all the advocates who have worked so long and so hard for so many years. And let's give a round of applause to all the legislators who finally got it done. We took the vote.
Yeah, okay, you get the idea. Just amazing cheering. And so now there's a real conflict, of course, between Timothy Cardinal Dolan of the New York Diocese, But the irony is, you know, Cardinal Dolan is saying some good things, but they still have not excommunicated Cuomo, who is just bold in his insistence that this is the right thing to do, to be able to kill babies even up to the day of delivery. It's just amazing. It truly is. The process, the details of it are so horrendous. I mean, just imagine your grandchildren in the early stages of their life being, how would you kill them? How would you terminate their lives? It's brutal. It's just, it is infanticide. And so, interestingly enough, Rasmussen has done a survey, and they found that 44% of pro-choice voters oppose New York abortion law in their state. 44% of pro-choice voters oppose the New York abortion law. And another survey shows that just 21% of all U.S., likely U.S. voters, favor a law like New York's in their own state. Two-thirds of voters oppose a late-term abortion law, while 13% are undecided. And why is the abortion, besides the fact that for whatever reason the left loves killing babies, go figure, they just do. I know it has to do with sexual freedom. It has to do with the purported, you know, women's rights, women's opportunities. But heavens, in any other circumstance in life, do we put our personal opportunities for advancement or career ahead of the life of anyone? Does that mean is it okay to kill someone who gets in your way in terms of your career growth? Honestly, that's a crass comparison. But really, honestly, so you just kill your own baby so that you can, you know, have career advancement, or you can go back to work, or it's not convenient. I just think about that. Well, let me just say that also there's a lot of money in this. Planned Parenthood, by the way, the president of Planned Parenthood was invited by Nancy Pelosi to be in the State of the Union address last week, and she was indeed there. And just to put this in perspective, Planned Parenthood spent $6.5 million just for Democrats alone in the last election, $6.5 million. They elected several congressmen, and the way it works is these congressmen are elected, and then they, in turn, vote on abortion laws, and everybody's happy. The abortionists get more money, and the politicians get reelected, and it's just one big happy family. By the way, the federal government, yours and mine, your tax dollars, gave Planned Parenthood, which is the largest abortion provider in the United States, $563.8 million. That's what they gave them last year. This is why we keep harping, and I don't mean to mind saying harping in this context, against funding Planned Parenthood. What are we doing? Oh, I know Planned Parenthood claims that they keep those funds separate. Oh, they don't use tax dollars for abortions. They have a separate account for that. But you know how this works. If they don't have to spend money on other things because they have federal dollars, then that gives them more money to spend on politicians who will then turn around and legislate more horrendous kinds of abortion. And so then that brings us back to something else that happened last week. We're going to talk about Virginia a lot today. Delegate Bob Marshall is going to join me in just a second, and we're going to talk about that mess. But I want to remind you that last week, in case you missed it, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez announced this Green New Deal. And it sounds something like this. It's a 10-year plan to create a greenhouse gas neutral society that creates unprecedented levels of prosperity and wealth. It's a large-scale transformation of society. It guarantees everyone a job with family-sustaining wages, medical leave, vacations, retirement, high-quality education, high-quality health care, clean air and water, healthy food, safe, affordable, adequate housing, and security, even to those who are unable or unwilling to work. It is the new Green New Deal. We'll talk about that at great length on Friday, but I want to tell you that Nancy Pelosi tweeted, we have a moral responsibility to protect God's creation for generations to come. And Nikki Haley responded by saying, does God's creation not include protecting babies as well, Madam Speaker? And so on it goes. The incongruities, the Green Deal, ridiculous. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But meanwhile, Virginia is in a mess. We'll turn to that next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Ravina was trapped in the darkest parts of Mumbai, India's red light district.
Where we lived was very violent.
Children should never be this vulnerable. They need to be rescued.
It was very scary, and I cried every day.
They aren't safe, but they can be. American Family Radio and India Partners are teaming up again this year to sustain and grow the ministry of safe houses for children who are rescued from the red light district of Mumbai, India. Every $7.08 you give provides a day of safety, rescue, and care. That's full room and board, counseling, and sharing the love of Jesus. Here on this Monday, we simply ask a question. How many days of safety can you provide? Maybe it's $100 to provide about 2 weeks of safety. Maybe it's $1,000 or even $2,000. Operators can take your gift now when you call 877-616-2396. Our goal today is 1,000 days of safety. 877-616-2396 or give online at afr.net.
This is Peter Rosenberger, and this is your Caregiver Minute. Dark thoughts often grip us as caregivers. We fearfully cry out for someone to tell us what to do, where to go, how to cope, or even why this is happening to us. When he was just a toddler, our oldest son fell and lacerated his chin, and I had to hold him down while he received stitches. I'll never forget the look of terror in his eyes and his screams as he endured what, for him, was horrifying. He had no way to understand what was happening or how to cope. So instead of trying to explain infections, antibiotics, and so forth, I gently assured him that I was there and he would be okay. Soon the doctor finished, and I held our son and dried his tears. How are we any different when traveling in the often long valley of the shadow of death? Our Heavenly Father doesn't often give us the answers we demand, but He does give us the assurance we need, the assurance of His presence and His love for us.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger, brought to you by Standing with Hope, a ministry for the wounded and those who care for them. There's more information at standingwithhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Progressives in San Rafael, California say it's time to change the name of the Dixie School District. Activists say the word Dixie sends a racially charged message to minorities and harkens back to slavery in the Confederate South. There's just one problem with their argument. The Dixie School District was not named in honor of the Old South. That's what supporters say. It was named after Mary Dixie, a Native American woman connected to the school's founder. Another version has the founder naming the district Dixie to spite two Southern financial backers of the school, whatever the reason. I suspect that will not matter to the progressives, and I predict political correctness will win the day. You know, first they came after the statue and the monuments, and now they're coming after our names. And they will not stop until our history is turned into a great big pile of rubble. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester?
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would make.
I understand
make
that.
At that
I'm
point.
Asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Yeah, actually, you know, they say that they keep telling us that the Virginia issue started when the blackface page for Governor Northam was revealed, and that's really not true. The Virginia's problem started when Kathy Tran and the House of Delegates said what she just said, following what happened in New York when Cuomo signed that law making infanticide legal in New York while people cheered. Kathy Tran then very calmly added her own version that she introduced in the House of Delegates in Richmond. And then Ralph Northam, the Republican, the Democratic governor, Republican, according to CNN, Republican, but the Democratic governor weighed in on a radio interview, clip 11. This is what he said.
When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers.
That was Governor Ralph Northam in a radio interview, and I think that just shocked everyone. He is a doctor, a pediatric neurologist, and he dispassionately describes a baby being born and then kept comfortable while we decide whether we're going to let it live or not. That's what started this. It wasn't the blackface. And one of his medical school comrades heard him say that and was so outraged. The medical school comrade, friend, was the person that released that yearbook picture that showed on Ralph Northam's page two men in blackface, one dressed as a black man, the other in KKK hood. And so that's how this started. Well, I've asked Delegate Bob Marshall, who must be absolutely going crazy, sitting on the sidelines, because Bob was one of the rocks of the Virginia House of Delegates up until 2018. He served for 26 years. He's the author of their strict abortion restrictions in Virginia, also of the marriage amendment that prevented marriage between a man and a woman. So Bob is rock solid on these issues. By the way, he's the author of a book called Reclaiming the Republic, How Christians and Other Conservatives Can Win Back America. And he joins us this morning. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Sandy, thank you. That was an excellent introduction, including playing the questions that the delegate who was a prosecutor asked of Kathy Tran. You're right. This all started with the bill that Kathy Tran put in, which would have stripped every restriction that we had put up to try to curb abortions in the third trimester, which the Supreme Court authorized. It took away the 24-hour waiting period. It took away the requirement that the woman had to be given information about carrying the baby to term and for adoption. It took away the requirement that written informed consent be given to her in a language that she understands. It took the opportunity away for the woman to see the baby on ultrasound. Took away the requirement that the woman could be told she could withdraw her consent at any time, that she would have to be given detailed information about just gestational age and precise physical status of the baby. It also barred the physician from using, quote, undue inducement or any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, or coercion to influence the woman to have an abortion. There were three doctors who had to sign off. She made it one, and an offer of the woman to speak to the abortionist was removed. It also removed the regulation of the abortion clinics in the first trimester. So this was wide open, no restrictions at all. So that's why Delegate Todd Gilbert asked, well, can this go up to birth? And she was candid and said yes.
You know, Bob, when you were, was Kathy Tran, a Delegate Tran, serving when you were, or is she a new delegate?
She's a new delegate. She came in when the 15 Democrats who beat the Bushes and had help from the literally Planned Parenthood precinct workers and the national homosexual groups went around Virginia and beat 15 of us.
So, all right, so let's go to the governor for a second. When he was running for office, which you'll have to help me, has he been in office a year and a half, 2 years?
He was elected in November of 2017. He was a state senator, I think, starting in 2008. I had clashes with him. He was a member of the Senate Education and Health Committee, and he really was just aggressively, pro-abortion. And I remember going in there one time on a bill I had to restrict abortions, and he just didn't like me quoting medical journals because he wanted to be the only expert in the room. Now, he's a doctor. He's a clinician. I never claimed any expertise in that, but I did spend a lot of time at the National Library of Medicine reading, these journals. So he has a notoriety for being for abortion, but I don't think he ever stated so clearly, so obviously for the public to understand what this entailed in these late-term abortions, as he did on the radio program. What happened after that, this firestorm developed in Virginia. Then Governor Northam, Attorney General Mark Herring, who also is pro-abortion, Justin Fairfax, who's lieutenant governor, who was a board member of the Planned Parenthood Political Action Committee for Washington, D.C., they held a press conference with the Democratic leadership in the General Assembly. And so for about 3 days, this was going on, and then all of a sudden this doctor who was annoyed released this information, and this cataract of charges and other things about blackface and then about Justin Fairfax. All these things happened right after that, but there was 3 days of rationalization, justification, and defense of basically infanticide in Virginia by the three top officials of the state.
It is really interesting as you sit back and observe it, Bob, from the 5,000-foot level, that the infanticide portion, as you're right, not just in Virginia but nationwide, was building steam. People were outraged. And then suddenly you have this blackface story thrown into it. And the national media then acts as though that's the genesis of this, and that's the big problem. Although it is a big problem. I'm not saying it isn't a big problem. I'm just saying it's not what started this. It has been the thing that's taken the issue in a different direction, which has been a great relief, I think, and I'm sure you would agree, to people like Northam.
You hit it on the head. As a matter of fact, a local talk show host, WMAL up here in the morning, was speculating, why did this come out? Because she said, as you just did, this took the infanticide issue off the front page. And instead of talking about, killing babies in the ninth month and, quote, letting them die, which would be child abuse under any other circumstance in a class 4 felony, we're now talking about blackface. And then with Justin Fairfax, these other charges. But you're right, it took the infanticide issue completely off the table.
And ironically now, as much of a hot button as race is, I am amazed and stunned at the casual way Ralph Northam is responding to both charges. And just to give an example, last night Gayle King interviewed Ralph Northam in a lengthy interview. Let's listen to just the very first part of it. This is clip 8.
I know this has been a very difficult week for you in the state of Virginia, so where would you like to begin?
Well, it has been a difficult week, and if you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary. Just 90 miles from here, in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while...
also known as slavery.
Yes. Yeah. And, while we have made a lot of progress in Virginia, slavery has ended. Schools have been desegregated. We have ended the Jim Crow laws, easier access to voting. It is abundantly clear that we still have a lot of work to do. And I really think this week raised a level of awareness in the Commonwealth and in this country that we haven't seen certainly in my lifetime.
And why you think you still deserve this job when so many people are calling for you to step down?
Well, again, we have worked very hard. We've had a good first year, and I'm a leader. I've been in some very difficult situations, life and death situations, taking care of sick children. And right now,
you're a doctor, yes.
Right now, Virginia needs someone that can heal. There's no better person to do that than a doctor. Virginia also needs someone who is strong, who has empathy, who has courage, and who has a moral compass. And that's why I'm not going anywhere. I have learned from this. I have a lot more to learn. But we're in a unique opportunity now. Again, the 400-year anniversary of the history, whether it be good or bad, in Virginia, to really make some impactful changes.
And slavery in this country,
yes.
In this state, yeah.
Oh, man, I don't even know where to begin, Bob. That is so offensive to me. That is so offensive to me. He says he's, strong? He has empathy? Not toward babies, it doesn't sound like. He has courage? He has a moral compass? This is the guy that said, yes, that was me in blackface. No, that wasn't me in blackface. No, I'm not sure. But he has a moral compass. I'm outraged by that, and I should be quiet and let you respond. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, if it's a moral compass, the North Star seems to be shifting all over the place. I was astounded also when he said that he says prayers. And I thought, what God are you praying to when you end up with these kind of conclusions about disrespecting and destroying his most innocent creation, children? And his statement, I don't know if your listeners caught it, he talks about bringing African Americans to Virginia as indentured servants. Indentured servants were people who were brought here for a term of years. They had a contract. After so many years of working at whatever trade there was, you were free. The slaves weren't brought here as indentured servants. They were brought permanently as basically, you know, live chattel property human beings.
You know, why in the world would he choose that? I mean, he was going out of his way. Now, surely Gayle King knew this, and surely my black audience knows this, that he's bending over backwards to, it's so ingenuine, it makes me nauseated. He is excusing himself, I think. First of all, let me make this clear again. I personally don't think there's anything wrong with putting brown makeup on your face and imitating Michael Jackson or a rapper, or if you're going to be in a play or something. I just can't imagine why that's wrong. It's very different to do that and stand next to someone in a KKK costume. That is, the humor leaves at that point. And so, and also he was called Coon Man. And we all know that's a horribly derogatory term used to black people in, I don't know how, when it stopped. It's certainly not mainstream now, but he was called that in the 80s. I mean, and now he's trying to tell Gayle King, who's black, that he's trying to talk about how wonderful, what a job he's doing, and how Virginia has, you know, restored all these rights. And I just don't understand it. Bob, explain it to me. What did you feel that he was trying to manipulate her and black listeners?
Well, when you don't have kind of objective moral standards, but your standard is your own will, what you desire, anything you desire by that definition is, quote, automatically good. So he shifts around and says he's got all these qualities, but how are they being used? Compassion for whom? Certainly not the unborn child. I mean, that, you know, that's just off the charts. He had this program where he wanted $6 million a year, I think, for these long-acting, reversible, so-called contraceptives, the really abortifacients, to be given to teens. That's not honoring, marriage at all. As a matter of fact, a bunch of these things will end up leaving these young women sterile for the rest of their life. So what is he talking about? I really can't, you know, track him on this because, again, the standards he has are based not on objective reality, objective right and wrong, but on the shifting sands of desire, which can change in a minute.
My understanding is, in fact, everybody's reporting that he is not resigning. He says out of his own lips, I am not resigning. And, of course, the press, my perspective is that they've backed way off. Is in Virginia, are they still on him to resign?
It comes up, but there's nobody, you know, pushing it. Although this certainly is a constant in the governance of the Commonwealth at this time, and anything he touches is going to have to be influenced by that. Like, you've got Mark Herring, who also acknowledged that he had done this blackface when in college. So normally if you have a question about the status of the Constitution, you ask the Attorney General, and he's authorized to give official opinion. But would you send a request for an official opinion as to, you know, can Justin Fairfax be impeached or whatever, given his background? When he was he was highly critical of the governor and said Northam should resign. He's doing the same thing. I mean, these people have no sense of shame as to what should disqualify them from criticizing others. What is it in the New Testament? You know, you don't, look about the speck in your neighbor's eye when you have the beam in your own eye.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, well, yes, and that's, it's common sense. Of course, all God's truth is truth. And so it applies whether you believe in the New Testament or not. It's like when everybody's appalled when someone is all over another person or something the first person is guilty of and it comes out. It's disgusting to us. And that's exactly, as you described, that's what Mark Herring did to Ralph Northam. So now here we are in this sort of crisis in Virginia, Bob. This once, I don't need to tell you, once great Commonwealth state, which led the revolution, was the home of the signers and the writers of the Declaration of Independence. This is a disgrace to Virginia. and it has not been resolved. My guest is Bob Marshall. He's a former delegate. He was there for 26 years. His book is called Reclaiming the Republic, How Christians and Other Conservatives Can Win Back America. We'll be back to talk about the other two when we return.
Do not trust in these deceptive words. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. When photos surfaced purporting to depict Virginia Governor Ralph Northam clad either in blackface or in KKK garb, the Virginia House Democrats demanded that Governor Northam resign immediately. However, after allegations of sexual assault committed by Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax and Attorney General Mark Herring admitted to dressing in blackface as a college student, the Virginia House Democrats have made no such resignation demands. It makes one ask why. If sexual assault accusations and dressing in blackface are disqualifiers for public office, we should expect the Democrats in the Virginia House to be consistent in their resignation demands. Shouldn't we?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The state of New York passed a bill legalizing abortions for any reason up to birth. It removed protections for a born-alive child and allows a child who survives an abortion to be murdered. When the bill was signed, participants erupted in applause. What's happened to us? How can people be happy about taking an innocent life? Maybe this is symptomatic of the last days the Bible warns us about, in which people love themselves more than others, are brutal, and without love for what is good. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
There's a lot happening around us. That's why Christians need to stand strong on family values and morality. Hi, I'm Ray Rooney, editor of The Stand, a blog from the American Family Association. The Stand has timely, carefully written articles on relevant cultural issues that you can quickly forward to others. The Stand is a beacon of light to a society in need of direction. Visit afa.net/the stand.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Democrats in Congress have turned President Trump's tax returns into their quest for the Holy Grail. This, despite the fact that New York has audited his tax returns every year for 40 years, and that as president, his finances also are audited every year. If there is something there, the Trump haters in New York would have found it long ago. Plus, Democrats are not entitled to his returns. The president is a citizen of the United States, and all citizens enjoy the protection of the Fourth Amendment, which says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects shall not be violated. The president's tax returns are part of his papers. No warrant can be issued to seize them unless there is a probable cause that the president has committed a crime. Try again, Democrats. That dog won't hunt.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The New York Times reported yesterday that a lawmaker in the United Kingdom single-handedly blocked legislation that would have strengthened Britain's existing prohibition on female genital mutilation. Deplorable as this Member of Parliament's action is, at least it's still illegal in the UK to mutilate girls' and women's genitalia. Unfortunately, that is not the case in nearly half the states of this country. Last November, District Judge Bernard Friedman ruled that the U.S. statute enacted in 1996 to prohibit FGM is unconstitutional due to a drafting error. In the absence of such a federal prohibition, it is currently perfectly legal to mutilate little girls in 23 American states. The New York Times should devote attention to the urgent need for American lawmakers to fix the federal statute and to enact appropriate protections against female genital mutilation in every state in the Union. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And now your attorney general is also has some explaining to do about his use of blackface. He said it was because he was Halloween and he was dressed up as his favorite, one of his favorite rappers, Curtis Blow. Mm-hmm. Calls for him to resign as well. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I know Attorney General Herring well, as I do Lieutenant Governor Fairfax. And, you know, we have all grown. I don't know what the Attorney General was thinking, what his perception was of race, of the use of blackface back then. But I can tell you that I'm sure, just like me, He has grown. He has served Virginia well. And he and I and Justin, all three of us, have fought for equality. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I regret that our Attorney General is in this position, but this is a decision that he's going to need to make.
That was Governor Ralph Northam with Gayle King last night. Let me just translate that for you. So Governor Northam, who's known as Coon Man, because of appearing in blackface at more than once, we know, he's learned. He's learned from his, he's grown. And I know that I embrace infanticide, and I know that I have done these offensive things racially, but I fought for equality. Now, what does that mean? It means I got you money. I got you positions. I did stuff for you. So nothing to see here. Maybe in my heart, I'm kind of I have toyed with racism. Let's just at least say he did that. I'd say he was blatantly. I just can't understand. To me, that's blatant racism. But that's okay. You see, that's got to be okay because I've got you stuff. You know, I've got positions for you. So look the other way. Plus, I'm making sure that you can have all the abortions you want. And you know how helpful that is to you women, Gayle, and regardless of color. I've got your back when it comes to that. That's what that means to me. And so we are in the business of sniffing out truth. And I think the lie meter is pretty high on Ralph Northam. And speaking of justice, real justice, I want to just say for a second, we are still working with India Partners to get these kids out of the red light districts of Mumbai. And you can only imagine how difficult life is. Some of these little girls even get pregnant because their mothers are prostitutes and they're just not protected. It's just hard to imagine, just like it's hard to imagine someone not protecting a newborn. It's just hard to fathom. This is the same but different. These kids are a little older, but there's no protection for them. And India Partner is providing days of safety for them. They are $7.08 a day to help a little child get out of the grips of this kind of stuff. And so if you would like to help, we would love it. Our phone number is 877-616-2396. How many days of $7.08 can you afford? Lots of you have already been generous, and I'm sure some of you want to be and you just haven't called yet. So this is your chance to do it. It's 877-616-2396, or go to afr.net, and please make your most generous contribution. Well, I want to play one more clip. Gayle King asked Ralph Northam about his lieutenant governor, who is now also having a very bad week. Let's listen.
Let's talk about Justin Fairfax.
Yes.
In the beginning, he did not call for your resignation. He said, you know, let the governor decide. I know the governor will make the right decision. But now his story has also changed.
Yes.
As you know, two women have come out and accused him of sexual assault.
Yes.
Sexual inappropriateness. And they have both said that if there is an impeachment hearing, that they will testify against him. Where do you sit on how you feel about Justin Fairfax today? Are you too calling for him to step down?
I can only imagine that it must take tremendous courage for women to step forward and talk about these things that just are so hurtful. And these accusations are very, very serious. They need to be taken seriously. As you know, Governor Fairfax has called for an investigation. I really think where we are now, we need to get to the truth. The truth is important, and certainly
He too is calling for an investigation.
Yes, he is, and I support that. And if these accusations are determined to be true, I don't think he's going to have any other option but to resign.
At this time, do you think he should resign?
That's going to be a decision that he needs to make.
I know he needs to make it, but what do you think?
I want the truth to come out. I certainly support an investigation. And again, these accusations are very serious, and we need to get to the bottom of them.
Boy, that is so interesting. I'm going to ask Bob to respond to that in just a second. But just to give you the facts, Justin Fairfax, lieutenant governor, a black lieutenant governor. I think he's the second in the history of Virginia, second governor. He would have been the second black governor in Virginia history if Northam had to step aside. But evidently he's not going to, because nothing to see here, folks. Just move on. Dr. Vanessa Tyson has accused him of sexual assault, which I'm not going to describe, but it's pretty graphic. Democratic convention in, I forgot what year it was. And then Meredith Watson has come out and said that he raped her, actually raped her when they were students at Duke. And The attorneys have Facebook and texts from her telling her friends about it right after it happened. And so he's had to hire counsel to defend him. And you heard Ralph Northam kind of hedge on whether he should resign. Ralph shouldn't resign, but maybe Justin should. Bob, Delegate Bob Marshall, who knows these characters and players very well, what are your thoughts about all of this?
Well, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about what's being said, all of these progressives have pure motives. It's, you know, whatever they do is from the heart. It's good. It's clear. It's righteous. So don't look at their actions necessarily because their motives are good. So this is what we're dealing with. And that's why they get to denounce everybody else as a bunch of racists, people who just hate homosexuals per se. It's all false. You know, Northam was the one who had a TV ad featuring minority children chased by with a pickup truck with Ed Gillespie stickers on them. Ed Gillespie was the Republican who ran against Northam in 2017. So here he is, either the Klan man or the blackface man, and then he says he was neither, putting these ads and charges against Republican Ed Gillespie, and then he ends up with this coming back on him. It's like natural law. But the circumstance that we're in is how do you address this at this point? The Virginia Constitution, Article 5, Section 17, talks about impeachment. It says the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, judges, and other individuals offending, and these are critical words, offending against the Commonwealth by malfeasance in office, corruption, neglect of duty, or other high crimes or misdemeanor may be impeached. The term in office kind of suggests that you can't be impeached for something before you took office. And I've checked out the authorities on the federal impeachment provisions of the Constitution and the state impeachment provisions, and it seems that's the case here. So legally, I don't know how you could do an impeachment, but I know there's going to be a fight over that. I mean, you could cut the money off for the accoutrements of office. I mean, you can't have a trial of Mr. Fairfax and say you're guilty. That's called a bill of attainder, and that's prohibited in the Virginia Constitution and the U.S. Constitution. But you could cut the money off for his office, so he's kind of hobbled. He won't have a chauffeur. He won't have a state car. You could take away the state phone and say, you know, you're on your own, to kind of like push him into the circumstance. Well, you have to figure this out. But again, everybody deserves due process. But boy, in the meantime, this is so scandalous and just hard to get anything done, because when you're looking at him acting, you're thinking, why is he making this decision? Is he doing it because he's defending against a scandal that his name is associated with? Or is he doing it for the policy reason that the circumstance desires? It really is undermining confidence.
Oh, no question. I mean, it's just, it's not even funny. Honestly, I don't think people are laughing about this, Bob, even at a distance. I think they just are, it's like, what in the world? Maybe there are some jokes. I have heard jokes about, you know, will anybody in Virginia who has not worn blackface or committed sexual assault please step up and be governor? You know, so there are jokes like that. But it's really kind of a tragedy. But now, in case of Jason Fairfax, he has allegedly committed criminal acts. And I think there's going to be, I suspect there will be charges filed against him. I think there's no limit of, there's no statute of limitations. This second accuser who said she raped him says she doesn't want any money. She just wants, she's willing to testify publicly. So it's a very serious charge against him. And then, of course, that brings up the notion about what happened with Judge Kavanaugh in his hearing when he was accused by Ford of laying on top of her on a bed. That's basically what the charge was.
Right.
And so the irony is when you ask, even the Washington Post is admitting that the Democrats are not treating this the same way they did the Kavanaugh issue. In other words, they were more than willing to believe Blasey Ford and that all women should be listened to, but not so much in the case of Jason Fairfax. Are you seeing that also?
Yes. Well, I mean, right now the Democrats in Virginia in public office are kind of paralyzed because they're the ones who initiated the call for Northam to resign. when the charges came out against Justin Fairfax, they kind of like got a little bit, you know, the cat bites your tongue. And then when Mark Herring admits, and I think he knew someone was going to out him shortly, that he did the blackface, they're completely paralyzed as to what to do now. The polls are kind of evenly divided in Virginia as to who should resign, who should not resign. I mean, the state of Virginia, I don't know that we can conduct the investigation for actions that took place in Massachusetts and the other in North Carolina. You'd have to have a complaint filed with a district attorney or a prosecutor down there. They'd have to investigate, go to a grand jury and say there is a reasonable grounds or there's not. I did a preliminary check on the laws in Massachusetts. I don't know that the action that was alleged of Justin Fairfax up there is within the statute of limitations. But I don't think there's a statute of limitations in North Carolina. I'm just going on, you know, gut.
Yes, that's what I read, too. I read the same thing about North Carolina.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right, on rape. So that could be prosecuted, but that would have to be up to the, you know, authorities in North Carolina.
Yep. But in the case, but to set his apart, that he is a more apparent peril than in terms of legally and also the Constitution as you described than are Herring and Northam. Now in the House of Delegates, Bob, we all know at least in general that the power went to the Republicans only because of a toss of a coin or some such thing. So what kind of power? Is there good leadership on the Republican side that could respond to this in a healthy way?
Last week, the Speaker, who's a Republican, said there's no appetite for impeachment. That was, you know, before Patrick Hope, a Democrat from Arlington, decided to tell Justin Fairfax, if you don't resign by Monday, I'm going to threaten to put this in. But his Facebook was loaded up with a whole bunch of critical comments. I saw a guy on Tucker Carlson, a Democrat that Carlson has on there oftentimes, that says, well, yes, all these things are problems with the governor. In other words, the order of succession in Virginia after the governor is the lieutenant governor. If he can't serve, it's the attorney general. If the attorney general can't serve, it's the speaker. Now, that is how the order of succession works. This Democrat guy says, well, basically he insinuated you need to replace the chief executive with the Democrat. No, that's not the Constitution of Virginia. Constitution of Virginia is what the people voted under. It was approved in 1970 or 71. It's very clear as to who succeeds who in these circumstances. So the fact that it's a Republican, you can't all of a sudden back away and say, well, we don't want justice because a Republican will get it. That's the condition under which everybody voted last year. And even if it came about because of the flip of a coin, that's still the law.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, the Washington Post is actually publicly saying that the Democrats are publicly calling for Northam to resign while privately wanting him to stay on until the issue with Fairfax and Herring are resolved. Yeah, so this is the way the game is played. So don't know, Bob. Let me just ask you, let me turn this back to you personally for you. After putting so much of your life spending it serving in Virginia, I'm guessing this might have been a rough patch for you. And do you think that you'll run again to try to reclaim your seat? Because you were beat by a transgender man, weren't you? Female.
Spent $1 million, right. Well, you know, my grandson asked me, he said, Grandpa, are you going to go to Richmond again? And I said, well, Grayson, what do you want? And he said, I want you to stay with me. So he's very important in my life. He lives with us. And I just don't want to disappoint him. But what I've done is to write a book to show others how to do this. And it's based on my 26 years of experience. And, you know, they can read the book and you run yourself. The Christians have got to get involved.
All right. The book is called Reclaiming the Republic, How Christians and Other Conservatives Can Win Back America. Reclaiming the Republic, How Christians and Other Conservatives Can Win Back America. Delegate Bob Marshall, thank you so much, sir. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.